This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Tuesday, 28th of March, 2023. Market's trying to piece together some sense of a normalcy. Still, we have the takeover of Silicon Valley Bank's assets by First Citizens. This may have been the proximate cause of the sort of rally in banking stocks we saw yesterday. U.S. Treasury yields also mean reverting a bit back up higher into the range. Of course, there's a lot of ground to cover before they would be anywhere near back to where they were at cycle highs. Taking a little bit of the Fed cutting later this year out of the forward curve there. A bit interestingly, the broader market, though, not getting a whole lot of traction on this. So we still have the S&P stuck around the 4,000 level, and I believe the cash index closed slightly below yesterday, with the NASDAQ 100 action a little bit more negative as well. So we're all, we used the phrase in yesterday's podcast title, Peter, we're waiting for the next shoe to drop, and there are plenty of shoes out there that could drop. We focused on real estate, there's private equity, but this is not headline-generating stuff day-to-day necessarily, and I guess the market has a hard time figuring out what to do next.
Yeah, and the reason for that is because it's a very slow-moving train, private equity and real estate, because it's not what you call level one assets, so you don't have an official price. It's not mark-to-market on a daily basis, so it takes time, and often a lot of the changes happen abruptly when you know your financing gets in trouble or you get called by the investors. And we're actually seeing a situation like that this morning in Europe with this German company I mentioned last week on the podcast, Aroundtown, which is the third largest publicly listed real estate company here in Europe. And that stock is actually down 4%. So and you saw it, you can see it here on slide two with the global industry groups overview here, that the real estate stocks were weak in the global indices yesterday, together with, and that was because of the yield impact. So as you mentioned, John, the yields were rising and we had the pro-cyclical transportation, energy and banking stocks leading the gains yesterday. But the reason why the overall index yesterday was more or less flat is because we have this market structure where you have a very high percentage of weight in the technology sectors, and that was low, as you can see here, media and entertainment and semiconductors and technology hardware. That's where Apple sits. It seems a little bit like we have a very binary market, I would say. But I'm really zooming in on real estate and private equity, and especially Sweden, which right now is the only country that is expected to decline in terms of GDP this year, and they have really some troubles in their real estate sector. So I think Sweden will be a very good guide for what comes next.
Yeah, they have a credit indicator that I've been tracking, and we look back to when they were trying to hike rates and normalize policy. I'm forgetting the years now. I believe it was around 2010, 11 or so. And you saw that credit growth indicator dropping to the order of just a little bit sub 5%, if my recollection serves. And you had Sweden hitting a recession back then. Now that indicator is sub 3%, and I imagine going lower still. So there's a heavy pressure, and a lot of that linked to, as you say, to the housing market. So and the credit cycle is going to get a lot tighter from the banking side. But just feeding into that story a little bit there.
Yeah, and on slide three, I've put in the U.S. leading indicators, because I mentioned in one of our internal calls yesterday that it's, and I think I said it on the podcast, that in an aggregate level terms, we're back to Q2 2018 level. So, basically where we were 5 years ago. And I looked at one of the subcomponents, because a lot of what we are talking about is the credit conditions. And if you look at financial conditions, and I think, was it Steen or was it you, John, that forwarded a very interesting take, something about how horrible the financial condition indices actually are. But if you look at the U.S. leading indicators from the conference board, they have something called the leading credit index. And I suspect that they're using different types of data points and surveys on consumer behavior, etc. And if you look at that index, I just looked at it this morning, it is actually, if you strip out the worst days of the worst months of the beginning of the pandemic, then we're actually at this, the highest levels in terms of credit stress or tightness, if you will, in credit indicators since the great financial crisis. And I think this is the angle to watch going forward, because it will coincide with cracks in the real estate market. So this is definitely something to look out for. And then Jeffrey Gundlach, which is the co-founder and CEO of Double Line Capital and one of the largest bond traders and investors in the world today, sitting out of California, he's tweeted out yesterday, not that he's particularly an oracle, but he is just a big player in this market. And he said, I think the U.S. is inside 2 months from a recession. So interesting things going on there, John.
Yeah, and on the note, that was an FT article, if I recall, or FT Alpha article I forwarded. I mentioned it on the show that the financial conditions indicators are lousy compared to what to do. And we had a conversation yesterday about this, in that it's very difficult to get a sense of where the stress is. You mentioned these level 1, 2, and 3 assets, for example. A lot of the leverage in the system getting hidden down there in private equity and shadow banking, and not necessarily in traded instruments where we can see what is going on to the degree we could back in the financial crisis when we had huge proprietary, portfolios that the large investment banks held, where they could mark to CDS prices and they could try to hedge that stuff by. And you could see the stress building in the system because these were things that were trading on exchanges. So I agree with that assessment that it's very difficult. And basically the suddenness of this SVB situation and Credit Suisse to a degree as well, showing how difficult it is to get a handle on all of this. Let's jump over to the commodity market. I want to get back to another slide there on slide 4, but I want to get over to crude oil, because we didn't see a lot happening yesterday in a lot of markets, equities and FX included, but we did see quite a rebound in crude. And you're pointing out that the positioning is really poorly set up here for if we are seeing a snapback in prices.
Indeed, John, we saw that very aggressive selling. I think it's a record pace during the past couple of weeks up until last Tuesday. We can see that in the weekly cut report. I got that here on the right-hand slide there. You can see the two latest bars, basically more than 200 million barrels of crude oil speculative sold. Around half of that is new shorts hitting the markets. Obviously, the new shorts, they are now starting to have second thoughts, especially after we retraced 50% of the March sell-off as of yesterday. 72.50 in WTI is that level. So look out for that. Further strength from here could attract some additional short covering. And then the drivers is just the normalizations we're seeing across markets the past couple of days, and also some supply disruptions on the pipeline from northern Iraq, the Kurdish-controlled region, down to the Ceyhan port in Turkey. And that's potentially, at this moment in time, removing 400,000 barrels a day. So that's just adding a little bit of additional upside momentum to the price action. But this was speculative driven to the downside. Now potentially could be speculative driven to the upside as well, because the world outlook has not changed dramatically during the past months. Obviously, expectations or worries have ebbed and flowed, but the supply and demand outlook has not really been warranting these massive moves in the market. So a lot of that is speculative driven, and we're potentially seeing the consequence of that now in the opposite direction.
Yeah, and we have this whole tension as well, as we've mentioned many times, between now this credit crunch likely feeding into the recession that has been brought forward by the whole situation. Meanwhile, the Chinese reopening story and some focus on commodity markets that got a lot of excitement in recent months, but that has been kind of limping and fading for a couple months. So we've seen a little rebound in crude oil, too early to take any indications from that. Copper, though, also springing back to life in recent days. We've talked a little bit about that. Is there any new status on copper?
Only that, first of all, that the price action has been the negative price action has been relatively muted. We saw quite a strong bounce last week, but as you can see on the chart down slide 7, we're trading with inside a downward sloping channel. Made an attempt last week on the upside. Now we had another attempt overnight around that 411 area. I think it's just the underlying fundamentals just continue to stack up in favor of copper. It's really a metal I'm struggling to see any reason why you should be selling it. We have an increased merging M&A activity in the sector, highlighting that some of the mining companies, they really want to get hold of this priced asset as we move towards the green transformation. The latest one was Lundin paying $950 million for a Chilean mine, Caserones. Overnight, we had BHP recently buying OZ Minerals. We got Rio Tinto also in active. Newmont is more in gold, but the recent merger with Newcrest will also release some copper mining activity there. So, and it's happening at a time where inventory levels are really not that strong. They are falling as the Chinese reopening starts to gather momentum. And there was actually a slide from Goldman's last week, was replicated by the Financial Times, basically showing that we could run out of visible copper stocks by August this year if the current pace of demand continues. So I think it's nothing is certain in this market at all, but copper potentially could be poised for a break here. Also, just keep in mind that speculators, during the correction we've seen in recent months, they completely removed their long. They actually held a small net short last Tuesday. They're completely unprepared for any additional price trends there.
All right. And rolling back to that slide I indicated, and it's very specific to today's economic calendar, we have the U.S. consumer confidence, not normally a big market mover. It has been in markets in decades past. But the reason I bring it up is when you have an indicator that has a 60-year history-ish, that is at some remarkable levels, maybe it's worth discussing and worth considering what's going on here. And the remarkable thing is not necessarily the overall level of the index, which I don't even have there on slide 4. I think it was 102.9 in February, expected to drop a couple of points today. It has been edging a bit lower, but it's just that incredible spread between the present situation, so the line you see there in black, which is sort of towards the higher end of the longer-term historical range and has been recently popped a little bit higher. Strong present situation suggests people happy with especially employment levels, but the expectations rolling over quite badly and actually as getting in on the worst levels of the pandemic. And then the spread between those two, which is the sort of dark red line, actually hit its lowest levels in February since 2001. And there were only a handful of observations back then that were ever lower than the current level. So we're seeing this continue. It really does suggest, and this actually, this dark red line fits very well with the yield curve, which is, of course, is the most inverted it has been since the early 1980s. Just a remarkable set of circumstances, and I suspect that the sense of a strong employment market could be there, but it feels like if consumer confidence in expectations terms is rolling lower, there may be a change of behavior in coming here. Rolling forward to FX, not a lot to report. We still have a lot of the current trends in place that we've talked about. Gold has eased quite a bit lower with the little pop back in yields and a sense of normalcy trying to assert itself. Maybe one of the more interesting things overnight was the Japanese yen trying to piece together a rally. There was a story from Bloomberg about a very large life insurer, Daiichi, and the incoming president there talking about no interest in buying U.S. treasuries despite the high yield because of the hedging costs, and his interest in putting most of their eggs in the long-term JGB basket, 30 to 40 years, etc., because these offer the proper asset liability matching for their portfolio of life insurance. And the ability of dollar yen to even rally overnight despite the pop back in U.S. yields was quite interesting and unusual relative to the standard correlations we expect. It has sort of bounced back a bit this morning, dollar yen, but it is a compelling story and a consideration that traditional flow of Japanese savings has changed its character. And we are coming up on the end of the Japanese financial year here on Friday. Okay, Peter, we need to get back to the equity market. Oh, you do have one very discretionary consumer item, Carnival Cruises, that is reporting yesterday as we discussed. So the results are in. Take us through that and what else you're looking at today.
Yeah, the shares were only up 1% in extended trading, which a little bit of surprise given, I would say, a sizable beat on both revenue and the operating income side of things. And they said on the conference call that they are well booked for the remaining of this year at higher prices. I would think that that's a pretty good outlook right there. But apparently, it's not really gathering a lot of attention from investors. I think there is growing concerns about a quick or an abrupt shift in consumer sentiment, and that could change very quickly Carnival's fortune. And we talked about it yesterday. It's a company that is really saturated with debt here. Very high default probability still for that company. It's really hanging in a very thin thread here. So it's a balancing act for this company. But in the short term, they're surprising to the upside. Ocado, which is one of the largest online grocery, I think it is the largest online grocery company here in Europe, with its base out of the UK. They beat on their fiscal year 23 Q1 on the retail sales a little bit, and they're sticking to the guidance they gave last time. But what they are observing and communicating to the market, I find interesting, and maybe it's just confirming what we all know. Consumers are reducing the number of items and the value of those baskets that they purchase with the Ocado. There is also, because of the overinvestment, Ocado basically is in the same boat as Amazon, was extrapolating trends during the pandemic and thereby ended up overinvesting in warehouse capacity. That's also a problem for Ocado. And then they have the rising wage costs. So there is a lot of pressure on the profitability of Ocado there, and their, you know, their expansion into robotics automation and selling those solutions to other you know, warehouse operators and retailers is not going, I think, as fast as they would like to see. And then the big news is and the one I'm highlighting here with the price chart, which is not very particularly interesting if you look from a technical perspective, but that's Novartis, which is, I think, the largest pharmaceutical company here in Europe. They came out yesterday with a breast cancer drug in phase 3 trial. A very huge trial. It's been running for quite a substantial time here, and it's met its primary goals. Patients are living longer with using this drug, and they're living longer without tumors returning. So, and that's a very positive. I won't call it a game changer for breast cancer, but it's a considerable improvement from what we already have on the market. And if you consider that this is one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world, rising 8% on that news give you an indication of how big the breast cancer market really is and how big this is for this company. So very very great to have positive news coming out despite, you know, all the crisis talk about real estate and banks. And then if we look ahead today, we'll get results from BYD. You know, it's obviously quite late because they will be reporting their Q4 numbers, and we already know that deliveries on the electric vehicle. So I think the market will not pay a lot of attention to what comes out from BYD. And the focus is on Micron Technology and Lululemon Athletica. We talked about Lululemon. It's a fast growing sports retailing. It started with yoga pants, now it's expanding into new categories like shoes, etc. Growing 26% on the top line. They're really gaining market share, especially among women. And in the younger age groups. So it's eating into Nike's and Adidas business. Super interesting company. I've highlighted it here on slide 9 with the 5-year share price. And then Micron Technology, one of the world's leading memory and data storage chip makers. Super important company for consumer electronics and also data centers. So I think this will be a very good temperature on what is the spending habits, both of consumers, but also on the corporate enterprise side on data centers. So I'm really looking forward to Micron Technology, which will be reporting after the market close. And then if I remember correctly, Lululemon will be reporting before the market opens, if I remember correctly, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. I look forward to that. Let's look at the macro calendar highlights. We already covered that March consumer confidence, my most interesting data point of the day. We have an Australian CPI report overnight that is just a monthly figure that doesn't come with all the bells and whistles, trimmed, mean, and core, and otherwise that you get with a quarterly release. So could be, of course, some market action around that if it's a big surprise either way, but it is the quarterly figure that's higher impact there. And then on the CPI front, we also have Germany on Thursday and on Friday, the Eurozone figures. But also up today, maybe a little bit interesting to see the temperature around the whole Silicon Valley Bank and banking turmoil in the U.S. as the chief Fed regulator, Barr, forgetting his first name, is out testifying before a Senate panel on all things Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, and the whole, of course, the reliability and strength of the entire system, which he'll be trying to reassure everyone about, no doubt. But watch for that one there. And we have a U.S. Treasury auction. Worth noting that the 2-year auction yesterday was very weak, suggesting maybe people would like to see some better demand or some higher yields coming in before demanding more before demand picks up for Treasuries. 5-year today, we'll have a 7-year tomorrow. All right, let's have a look at how things roll in today. Whether this sense of stability can deepen or whether the immediate sense that we're still in a turmoil and uncertain phase continues. We'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.